And good afternoon. We are back on Vox Pop. I'm Bob Barrett. It is 2:08 here on the East Coast, and we're setting up today without Dr. Alan Chartok, who can't be with us. Again, I'm Bob Barrett. And joining us today to discuss obstetrics and gynecology and women's health in general is Dr. Robert Dropkin. Dr. Dropkin is an OBGYN in private practice on Executive Drive in Albany and a clinical professor of obstetrics and I really wish you'd have a different specialty that I could say easier.
Well, Bob, you can call it OBGYN.
Okay. At Albany Medical Center, a graduate of Albany Medical College, Dr. Dropkin completed his OBGYN residency at Albany Medical Center and is board certified by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Welcome to Vox Pop, Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you'd like to ask Dr. Dropkin a question, and doesn't matter how you pronounce things, you're not getting paid to do it. Our number is 800-348-2551. That's 800-348-2551. And start the discussion here on Vox Pop today. And Doctor, one thing we were speaking before going on the air today is one of the things that you would really like to get out there is that an annual exam is called an annual exam for a reason. It's something that should be done on a regular basis. And there's some conflicting information out there.
Exactly, Bob. As you say, we call them annual exams because we'd like to see people on a yearly basis. Women in different age groups, whether adolescents or reproductive age, post-reproductive age, elderly patients, all should be making sure that they are seen by their provider, their OBGYN doctor or nurse practitioner or midwife on a yearly basis. There are many new recommendations that they may be hearing of regarding pap smears, mammograms. And I think the take-home message that I'd like people to understand is that whether or not a particular technical test is done on a yearly basis, a conversation with your provider, a physical examination with your provider are very important for maintenance of good OB and GYN health.
A lot of things can happen in a year, so in 2 years, you really don't want it to be that big of a gap between exams.
Exactly right. And I'll give you a couple of different examples. A patient may have a normal pelvic exam 1 year and the following year miss her exam, and then the subsequent year there be a mass in the pelvis or something along that line. I've had patients over the years who've had a mammogram performed. They come back the following year, have another one, and now there's a lesion or some sort of a malignancy or something in the breast that's abnormal. Should she have missed that yearly exam and gone for 2 years? You don't know what would have happened. So there are guidelines that do suggest every 2 years for mammograms. There are guidelines that suggest less than annual exams for pap smears. But I think it's very important for patients to understand that those treatments and their care should be individualized and should start with an annual presentation to their provider and discuss the different options and the different screening tests that pertain to them individually.
And this includes, I'm sure, even if a woman is, say, young and isn't getting those exams on a yearly basis yet, say a mammogram or such, but still having a physical exam is just smart to do a year on a yearly basis.
And there are many things, not only with the physical, but with the history, that may tip the doctor off to other types of problems. If somebody's having chronic exhaustion, let's say, there might be an anemia issue. There may be a thyroid issue. There are many things that OBGYNs look at and listen for in the history and physical that are not necessarily exclusive to the pelvic organs of the patient. Depression, problems of that nature are certainly screened for. Sexual problems, compatibility issues with their partner, infectious diseases. These are all things that are screened for in the history, looked for in the physical, and certainly will not be found if the patient is nowhere to be found.
Exactly. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call to get involved in the conversation with the doctor. And let's start going to the calls right now. We'll speak to Jason in Pittsfield. Jason, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
My wife and I just found out we were expecting last week, and my question has to do with anemia. She has had anemia, borderline, and just recently gone up a little bit, but she has low iron reserves. And so I'm wondering what your comments are on that.
Well, there are many different types of anemia. It sounds from what you've told us that your wife's problem may be an iron issue. And
yeah.
Before we get into it, I just want to extend congratulations. That's a wonderful piece of news that you're sharing with our audience.
Yeah, great way to start the day here.
Yep. We will often have patients taking prenatal vitamins, which may or may not have some additional iron in them. But after conversation with her OBGYN, your wife may want to supplement further with additional iron taken once a day, probably not at the same time as her daily vitamin, because iron will be absorbed better if not taken all at once.
Okay.
So my suggestion would be check with her doctor and see what their recommendations are in terms of a further supplement besides her daily prenatal vitamin. And start with one at a time of day, not the same as when she takes her daily vitamin.
Okay.
And then follow that up and see if the iron stores can be replenished. As you may or may not know, Jason, the baby is going to preferentially receive the iron that your wife consumes.
Okay.
So her anemia may very well worsen and actually will normally worsen in any patient during pregnancy.
Okay.
And so it is important to supplement.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. 1-800-34-TALK-1 to talk to Dr. Dropkin. Let's go to Saratoga and talk to Brian. Brian, good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Doctor, I was curious about your thoughts on... bottom line is, my wife is 41. She's considering hormone replacement therapy post-hysterectomy, complicated with the fact that she's had a lifetime of stage 4 endometriosis, including multiple surgeries over the years for it, finally culminating in a hysterectomy last year. My concerns are twofold. One, about the possibilities of endometrial issues coming back and or cancer issues concerning hormone replacement therapy, and I wondered what the current thoughts are on it.
Well, I think that's a terrific question. And just for a little background, I take it, Brian, that the ovaries and tubes were removed at the same time?
No, not necessarily. Ultimately, yes, but in stages, yes.
Oh, okay. But so at this point, the ovaries and tubes have been removed?
Yes.
Okay. So because of the fact that the ovaries and tubes have been removed, as well as the uterus from your original question, there will be no more estrogen production from the ovaries, which, of course, occurred prior to the removal. Now, just for our listeners, I know we have an extremely educated audience, but just in case there are some people that have not heard of endometriosis, that's a disease the cause of which is not clearly known. One theory, which was actually developed here in Albany Medical Center Hospital in the, I believe, 1920s by a Dr. Sampson, was that some of the lining of the uterus may flow backwards through the fallopian tubes during the normal menstrual cycle, and some of the tissue will implant in the pelvis or other areas of the abdomen, causing a tremendous amount of pain and possibly infertility in the patient. There are also other theories, but for lack of time, we'll hold off on going into those now. In order to prevent the endometriosis from persisting, the ovaries and tubes have been removed to eliminate the estrogen stimulation of the endometriosis tissue. Now, it's important to allow for an interval of time that will essentially starve the endometriosis of any estrogen stimulation in order for it to kind of wither away and hopefully die, so that there will not be any more endometriosis and your wife will not suffer the kinds of pain that she was previously. In my practice, what I do is I like to leave a six-month window of no estrogen to allow that to occur so that hopefully there is no more endometriosis. Now, at that point, the discussion begins regarding hormone replacement therapy. Prior to 2003, we had been prescribing a great deal of hormone replacement therapy to patients like your wife, who'd had a hysterectomy, removal of the ovaries and tubes, and did not have estrogen production anymore, as well as to patients who went through a natural menopause and their ovaries stopped functioning, usually at around age 51. Now, both of those groups were felt to benefit from estrogen replacement, and if the uterus was still present, progesterone replacement as well. Mm-hmm. In 2003, the Women's Health Initiative study was published suggesting higher rates of stroke in patients on hormone replacement therapy. And so the broad use of hormone replacement therapy quickly ground to a halt. Within the last several years, the issue has been looked at once again, and researchers and clinicians are now suggesting that for the first 5 years after menopause occurs, whether surgical or non-surgical, hormone replacement therapy may in fact be safe and beneficial for the patient. The original study did not really break down, the WHI study did not break down the patient populations by age. And the patients that were having more troubles were the older patients. And so now the suggestion would be, in somebody like your wife, to wait at least 6 months, let the endometriosis go away, and then consider hormone replacement therapy after discussion with her surgeon and her or her general OBGYN, if the two doctors are you know, different providers for her, and get their opinion. The benefits of hormone replacement therapy would include things like cardiac effects, bone effects, vaginal lubrication, and a reduction of symptoms of menopause like hot flashes, which can also have a very negative effect on the patient's lifestyle. At the same time, risks of hormone replacement therapy also have to be factored in, and that should be done in the conversation that she has with her provider.
That's a wonderful answer, Doctor. Thank you. A little good news, bad news for me. I was surprised that 6 months was the window. I thought it might be a longer period of time. I was unaware of the stroke risk, and you discussed some of the other cost benefits as far as hormone replacement. Could you briefly discuss, I know I don't want to hog too much time, but results of cancers or anything resulting in it, or...
Sure. Well, one of the cancers that we always have to consider with hormone replacement therapy in a patient who still has her uterus would be endometrial cancer. Now, the reason I bring that up specifically is because if there is persistent endometrial tissue, that is to say, the tissue from the endometriosis, those implants of endometriosis will act like little tiny uterine lining tissue, no matter where they are located. So in considering hormone replacement therapy in a patient like your wife who has had
advanced endometriosis,
not only should she be asking her provider about replacing her estrogen, but she also may want to discuss with them the prudence of adding progesterone. The reason for that being that estrogen in the first half of the menstrual cycle stimulates the lining of the uterus, causes thickening of the lining of the uterus to accept the fertilized egg. The progesterone in the second half of the cycle will stabilize the lining, but in the absence of fertilization, progesterone also will have the effect of preventing overgrowth. Now, if a patient theoretically has endometriosis and is constantly stimulating those endometrial implants with estrogen, it is theoretically possible that a overgrowth, a hyperplasia, or endometrial cancer could theoretically develop in the endometrial implants. So it's important that your wife speak with her provider about adding progesterone also and get their opinion there.
Okay. Brian, I hope that's enough for you.
That's quite enough. Thank you, gentlemen. Be well.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. That's the number. We have a lot more time. We have a few open lines. Get your calls in now. We'll be back in a few. Support for WAMC comes from Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting Bang on a Can Contemporary Music Festival with Steve Reich through July 28th, massmocha.org. The Legislative Gazette, daily reports from newspapers from around New York State at legislativegazette.com, the weekly newspaper of New York State government. National Fiber, featuring cellulose insulation from recycled materials for homes and businesses throughout New England, nationalfiber.com. And the Hygieia House, Block Island, Rhode Island, newly restored Victorian B&B, 10 rooms with ocean view and private bath, walking distance to beach and town, continental breakfast daily, thehygiahouse.com. And we're back, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. Medical Monday, Dr. Shartaki is not with us today. Dr. Dropkin is, and I'm just Bob Barrett. I play a doctor on the radio. It's Medical Monday, Dr. Dropkin, of course, an OBGYN in private practice, and at Albany Medical Center, a professor of OBGYN. We'd love to have your calls, 1-800-348-2551. One thing I did want to mention, just to go back to our topic of our last caller, the Women's Health Initiative, there has been a lot of study after that study about what you talked about, the people who were involved in the original study, and it looks like the ages were really skewed towards the older population of that. Is that true?
And the other issue is the analysis of the data really required a further breakdown in terms of different demographic groups. Hmm. So, say, women before 50, 50 to 55, 55 to 60, over 70, et cetera. Taking all of the data from the WHI and lumping it together to some extent may have provided a disservice, because further analysis has demonstrated, as we mentioned, that for the first 5 years after the onset of menopause, the risk-benefit analysis of hormone replacement therapy will suggest that it's a very reasonable alternative to take the hormone replacement, depending on the symptoms the patient is having and how disruptive the hormonal symptoms are to their life. Sleep deprivation is something that most people have occasionally experienced, and you know that it's a difficult thing to get up the next morning and be exhausted and function throughout the day. Well, imagine having hot flashes, which the patients suffer with. It wakes them from sleep. They can't get a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. And think about having that for months and months, and in some instances, years and years. And so it really is necessary for patients to have an in-depth discussion with their provider to try to balance risk-benefit and the quality of life issues that come with menopause.
And, of course, their doctor is going to know their history and the family.
Exactly, as we discussed before.
Yeah. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Tam in Del Mar. Tam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I also had a question about endometriosis. I'm 63 years old. I had it on my bowel, which caused havoc with eating and digesting food for many years, until a very good doctor finally figured out what it was. And she went in through my belly button and did a laparoscopy and cleared some of it out.
Mm-hmm.
So as I've gotten older and had menopause, it's gotten less and less and less. Does it ever completely go away?
You know, Tam, the odds are good that a lot of it will go away, because as we discussed earlier, without estrogen stimulation, it will kind of wither and die. And so hopefully, if it's not all gone, you, as you've mentioned, your symptoms are less. So hopefully that's because there's really no more of the disease to cause problems. I should mention, however, that one of the side effects of endometriosis are what are called adhesions. Things within the abdomen can sometimes get stuck together. And even if the endometriosis is gone, the adhesions can still cause pain and discomfort. So while the endometriosis may be completely resolved, there can be other factors that developed because of it. And again, if you are having problems, discussion with your provider is important.
Okay. The only problem I have is that I can digest a lot more foods, but not all of them, you know. Especially if something has preservatives or something that's a little harder to digest, my stomach can't handle it.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily want you to be assuming that's all endometriosis related. And a conversation with your internist or a gastroenterologist may also be warranted.
Okay. Thank you, Tam. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. Kristen is in Albany. Kristen, good afternoon.
Hi. I also was diagnosed with endometriosis. That seems to be the conversation of the hour. And I'm 41, and in February I had one ovary and one fallopian tube taken out. And since then I have gone into menopause. So I'm wondering, I felt like your advice was really helpful to the first caller, but I'm wondering if that advice changes if I, because I still have my uterus, which the first caller didn't. She had a full hysterectomy.
Right.
Right.
Now, Kristen, the important thing is, first off, you do still have the one ovary and tube.
Yeah.
But your periods have stopped for a full year. Is that true?
For 6 months.
Okay. We define menopause as having been a full year of no periods.
Mm-hmm.
So before, I would say, you know, you have, you're in menopause, that should be, you know, evaluated. You haven't gone a full year. A second thing would be you could do some blood testing, which
my doctor has. I mean, that's why I said I was in menopause.
Oh, okay. So you had an FSH?
Based on my blood test, and also I'm having really horrible symptoms.
Oh, a lot of hot flashes?
Yeah, I had a lot of hot flashes, sleep deprivation, weight gain, mood swings, everything.
Right.
Pretty much.
So I would suggest after discussion with your doctor, you consider the possibility of some hormone replacement. It's been 6 months. And if you do, because your uterus is there, and in fact, as I discussed earlier with one of the prior callers, even without the uterus in the face of an endometriosis diagnosis, I would suggest estrogen and progesterone being provided so that you don't develop an overgrowth in the lining of the uterus, which could become precancerous or cancerous.
Okay.
Thank you, Kristen. Good luck now.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Cynthia in Manchester. Cynthia, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I have a question. This is in regard to the hormone replacement therapy. I was on it from the time I was 52 until I was 70. I'm off of it now. I'm just curious as to why none of the physicians, when they're talking about hormone replacement therapy, never mention the fact that hormone replacement therapy is causes brain shrinkage.
Okay. Is that something you've heard of, Doctor?
That I have not heard, Cynthia.
I have several articles on it and from the internet. I had read it in a magazine, and I did some research on it.
Well, are they, you know, the American Journal of Medicine, or is it, you know, Jim's website? I do the health show. I see a lot of these internet things, too, and I get a lot of email on them. And it's considered the source, really. And if the doctor here looked puzzled, I'd imagine it's something that
it causes atrophy of the brain, and the proof of that is I do have atrophy of the brain. So I'm just wondering why nobody even said anything to me.
Cynthia, I have to apologize. I'm not familiar with the studies you're referring to. I haven't heard that. But
if you would, someday take a, try to investigate it, and maybe you'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Thank you for your call. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Yvonne in Albany. Hi, Yvonne.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I was just interested in that last call because I have a question about birth control pills. I'm 51. I am experiencing a big change in my monthly period where it's very heavy now and a lot of clotting, whereas I had some tests done back in March to find out if I had a tumor. Thank God they turned out negative, but I'm very anemic. And my doctor thought I'm premenopausal. I've been on estrogen, a form of birth control, since, I guess, since 1997, and never been off them. So I'm just concerned. I asked my doctor also, should I change the level of the birth control pill? Like, it was very interesting. I was listening before. I didn't understand the estrogen and progestin, like, is there a way that I can tell how much of a dose I am taking of estrogen and if it will affect, like, the heavy bleeding that I'm experiencing now? Or?
Yvonne, you're having the heavy bleeding on the pill? You haven't stopped taking the pill?
Last year we did stop it because I also have cramp, but it's every other month. So that's why my doctor thought maybe there was something like a tumor or something making me bleed.
But you stopped. You're off the pill.
No, I'm back on it. I got back on it in April, actually, just recently.
Oh, okay.
But I was off it last year. Most of last year, I was off of it almost 20 years of being on it.
And since you've resumed it, are your periods better?
Kind of early, but I don't mean to be gross, but I've had my period for a month now. It hasn't stopped, and it alternates between heavy clotting and then just bleeding,
mm-hmm.
where I'm on an iron tablet. I am taking iron supplements. And I just don't know if this is something that I'm going to experience until I'm not in menopause yet, but is this something I'm going to experience, or I don't know how to handle it.
I think you may want to talk to your provider about possibly a different pill. Because
okay,
it sounds like the pill that you're on is not regulating your flow.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
If maybe we could look at the type of estrogen I'm on. If that
sure,
makes
there
a
are
difference.
There are different types of progesterones, and you may want to look at different pills with different doses and different hormone makeups, and maybe you'll have more success.
Thank you. That helps out a lot. That last caller got me a little frightened because I've been on the pill for about 20 years.
No, and the other thing,
Yvonne,
is
my brain.
No. I don't want you to worry about that because there's no literature there out there that suggests that prolonged use of the pill is necessarily deleterious. Okay?
Yeah, it helped me out a lot. When I was younger, I had horrible cramping, a lot of pain, and once I got on the birth control, all that disappeared.
Good.
So thank you, doctor. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank
My
you
pleasure.
For the program.
1-800-348-2551. A quick note here, severe thunderstorm watch for most of the region is in effect till 7:30 this evening. We just got word of a severe thunderstorm warning for Albany, Columbia, and Rensselaer counties till 4 o'clock, and a severe thunderstorm warning is still in effect for Fulton and Montgomery counties. That expires at 2:50 this afternoon. So severe warnings for Albany, Columbia, Rensselaer counties until 4 o'clock, and thunderstorm warnings for Fulton and Montgomery until 2:50. 1-800-348-2551. Let's take one more before the break. Kelly is in Albany. Kelly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Perimenopause is kicking my butt, and I swear to God, I feel like a lunatic every month, and the mood swings are severe. My period is beyond unmanageable. I cannot leave my house on the second and third day without running the risk of horrific bleeding. We did a DNC last month. I'm begging my provider to give me a voluntary hysterectomy, but she says we can't do that. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm wondering what, how, I'm 50, I'll be 51. And what, it seems like no matter what the symptom that you're experiencing in this change of lifetime, you know, people just chalk it up, oh, that's perimenopause. And I guess my question is really, what can I expect from this, and how long am I going to suffer?
Well, Kelly, the bad news, I have a bad news, good news. So let me give you the bad news. The bad news is nobody can really tell you quite how long.
Oh, great.
But I do have some good news that you may want to discuss with your provider.
Okay.
There is a procedure which is not nearly as major or invasive as hysterectomy called endometrial ablation. And that is a procedure where you can, it can be done in the office or the hospital, in which the lining of the uterus is physically destroyed using heat. And it can greatly reduce the flow that you're experiencing.
Now, can I ask you something? Because this was why we didn't go for an ablation. After the DNC, we discovered that the lining of my uterus, and I was menstruating at the point of the DNC, the thickening that she anticipated to find was not present.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question was, if I burn the lining of the uterus, is that going to be... Well, obviously, you couldn't answer that. I've been, that has been spoken of. The other thing she said, the next step we might do would be an IUD, and I just...
Mm-hmm. And that's another possibility. And
okay.
That would be a way to try to control the heaviness of the flow using
right.
the IUD and the progesterone that the IUD would put out to
okay.
reduce the thickening of the lining of the uterus, of the endometrium, and to reduce your blood flow.
Okay, and the mood swings and the severity, that's just something
that you'd
you
have
know.
To look, well, that you'd have to look more to some sort of systemic, orally taken hormone regimen.
Okay,
sorry
good luck,
I couldn't
Kelly.
Give you more good news, Kelly.
Thanks for
thanks.
Calling.
Yep, bye.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. More calls on the way right after a quick break.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers, Poughkeepsie, serving the healthcare needs of the community, including trauma and emergency care, wound healing, and hyperbaric medicine. sfhospital.org. Identity Eyewear, Albany. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYEdentityEyewear.net. The Palace Theater, Albany, presenting John Prine and Lucinda Williams in concert Friday, August 17th. PalaceAlbany.com for tickets. And Oblong Books and Music, hosting author Carol Meso with her novel Mother and Child, July 28th at 7 p.m. in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com.
We're back on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Dropkin, OBGYN in private practice and a professor at Albany Medical Center. And we've got a full board of calls, so let's get right back to them. Mary is in Poughkeepsie. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, I'm not sure. Can you hear me? I'm actually driving at this point.
You're loud and clear,
okay?
Mary.
Okay, good. My question is, and I missed a little portion of the show, so forgive me if you've already spoken about this, but I have endometriosis. Pretty much half of my friends have endometriosis. I know that the statistics say that, you know, it's not 50% of women who have it, but it certainly seems like it. And I wonder what research is being done as far as prevention, and, you know, it causes so many, such a variety of problems. And it just seems so common. I was wondering what's being done as far as prevention and diagnosing it early on, because I was not diagnosed until I was 37.
Well, that certainly seems like a cluster of folks that have been diagnosed with that, Mary. I'm curious as to whether or not everybody has had a laparoscopy to actually confirm it, or if patients and friends of yours that have pelvic pain are presumptively being diagnosed with endometriosis.
Well, two of my friends have had laparoscopy, so it's confirmed. Hmm. I don't, you know, the other friends, I haven't specifically asked them whether they've had laparoscopy or not, but I know that they, and we're not, it's not like we all grew up in the same neighborhood or anything like that. It's not like, oh, is there something environmental specific mm-hmm. to where we live? But, you know, it just makes me wonder because it just seems like every other person I talk to has it. And you wonder, you know, I mean, I have kind of gone off the deep end health-wise as far as, you know, sort of trying to eliminate dioxin from, you know, anything that I come in contact with because I had heard that that was one possibility. And since nobody has any other, you know, since nobody seems to have an explanation, I figure that's one thing I can do for myself.
Yeah, I can't... I can't account for the clustering. Work that is being done with patients with endometriosis more is on the treatment arm, and there are different drugs that are being used. I don't know if you're familiar with Lupron. They're called gonadotropin agonists, and these are drugs that disrupt. I'm sorry.
It's the Lupron works on your pituitary.
Right. Well, in that area, right. And it disrupts the normal hormonal flow that results mm-hmm. in stimulation of the ovary and then ultimately the endometriosis. There are
And would
other...
that be used on a young woman?
I beg your pardon?
Would that be used for a young woman?
Yeah, can be.
Okay.
Okay, so, Mary, I'm really sorry. We're kind of losing you. You're getting kind of noisy, so we'll try to answer the rest of your question on the radio. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Is there anything else there for Mary? Doctor?
Yeah, there are other drugs called gonadotropin agonists and antagonists, which are other drugs that are being developed. So hopefully we'll be able to come up with effective treatments to help patients that are suffering with endometriosis.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. I want to be fair to a caller that we had before. I didn't want to be dismissive of it, and I did do some looking. I did find a few articles from January of 2009 about hormone replacement therapy and possible brain atrophy. I found a story in the Washington Post. I found a story from the National Institute of Health of the United K. It says the new research has shortcomings, including the study's design and the fact that the researchers did not have brain volume measurements prior to the women starting HRT. Consequently, it cannot be proved that the treatment caused changes in the brain volume. That was pretty much what I have here. But this was in the journal Neurology of January of 2009, and I saw nothing of it before or after that. 1-800-348. But I did look. I just wanted to let you know that I wasn't dismissing you. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Linda in Milford, PA. Linda, good afternoon.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. I'm 60. I'll be 65 next month. And I've been suffering with cysts in my left breast since I was in my 50s. Now, I've had several biopsies, and the doctor even tried to, you know, they tried to drain the cysts, and nothing worked. I have one that's very large, and it's behind the nipple, and when it gets really full, it's hard. I can press on it, and the fluid will come through the nipple. Now, she also tried a procedure, the radiologist that I go to, she injected them, I think it was some sort of alcohol solution, and she thought that might work, but that hasn't worked either. Now, they used to bring me back every 6 months for follow-up, but now it's a yearly basis. But I'm just tired of it. It's very stressful, you know, whenever, you know, they find something and, you know, you have to come back in. So my question is, what can be done with these cysts? Is there anything that eradicates them?
You know, Linda, I have to admit to you, you are out of my area of expertise, but I would suggest that mm-hmm. you look for a physician, possibly a breast surgeon. There certainly are several in Albany that specialize in breast care, and set up a consultation and see if maybe removal of the cysts would be something to be considered to give you relief both in terms of the pain and in terms of your anxiety about them.
Yes, and the radiologist also said that sometimes they can become cancerous, so that's another thing that bothers me. I mean, they've been there for years, especially this very large one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the biggest that they've ever seen.
Then I would certainly want to pursue possibly a more aggressive surgical approach.
Okay. Thank you,
All
Linda.
Right.
Okay.
Thank
good
you.
Good luck.
You
thank
bet.
You very much.
Thank
1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Beth in Schenectady. Beth, good afternoon. Hello, Beth. Are you there? Is it me? Beth is gone. Let's go to Robert in Cooperstown. Robert, good afternoon.
Yeah, this is Robert in Cooperstown. Hello, doctor.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, I'm a 79-year-old male, and doctor, doing my routine blood test for the last, at least 6 years, I've been showing a low platelet count in the range of maybe 50 to 70,000, and it seems to be stabilized, but doctor, I don't seem to get any answers if there can be any medication or if this is going to lead to anything else or what.
Well, Robert, we appreciate the call, but I have to admit to you, you are completely out of my realm of expertise.
I was afraid of that.
We have a lot of calls. I'm sorry to be rude, but we really have to go.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I'll try again next week.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Frank in Troy. Frank, good afternoon.
Yes, this is Frank just outside of Troy. I do have two quick questions for the doctor. My wife is 27. She's had two children naturally. Ever since that, she's been experiencing anywhere between 2 and 3 yeast infections a month. The other thing is during intercourse, she gets a lot of pain in her uterus. And I don't know if that's something that's normal. The doctor said it was, but we have our doubts.
Frank, let me just ask you, the uterine pain with intercourse, is that associated with orgasm or that's just during intercourse?
It's during the whole thing, and if it's like if I'm not extremely gentle or anything like that, or if I even hit the, like a spot a certain way, it's only one little spot, it actually causes her to be completely like done.
Okay. I would certainly have her go in to her provider. Possibly an ultrasound would help to see if she has problems with cysts on the ovary. It's possible that she might have the ovary or uterus positioned in a certain way that would cause pain, or she might have adhesions from, say, a previous infection or endometriosis, as we've discussed today.
Okay.
So I would certainly start with a visit to the doctor, a thorough physical exam, and possibly an ultrasound. Now, the yeast issue, there certainly are things you can try in addition to many of the over-the-counter medications, would include things like making sure that after exercise or anytime she does things that result in a lot of perspiration, she changes clothes quickly afterwards, after swimming, get out of her undergarments and get into dry clothing. At night, it's suggested that sleeping without underpants would be helpful. The common denominator you want to remember with chronic yeast infections is yeast grows best in areas that are moist. And
right.
So you want to be shooting for a situation where heat and moisture are minimized. So, for instance, jumping in and out of the pool or something like that over the course of the summer without changing in between is a perfect scenario for chronic yeast infections. The other thing is that with a chronic yeast infection, certainly there's inflammation and the vaginal tissue is going to be much more prone to pain when you have relations. So I think it's important that she go see her provider and address both of these issues and look for some form of relief. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. A slight chance they might be connected there, though, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Jeannie in Buffalo. Jeannie, good afternoon. It's Janine. I'm sorry. Janine, good afternoon.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I had a hysterectomy in 94.
right after my daughter was 6 months old, I was told forever, you know, you have pain, you have, you know, all this female problems because you're overweight. So I needed a hysterectomy. They did the hysterectomy, and now I have had hot flashes, night sweats, moodiness, you know, the typical menopause symptoms now since then. What can I do? I mean, I've lost over 120 pounds. I do exercise. I don't know what else to do at this point.
So, Janine, when your uterus was removed, were your ovaries and tubes removed also?
They left one ovary because of my age.
Okay.
And you
began these symptoms how long ago?
Right after the surgery, like maybe a month after.
And you're how old now?
51.
Okay. So you've actually been having these symptoms ever since you had the one ovary removed, which makes me wonder whether or not the second ovary was still functioning after the hysterectomy.
Right.
But again, as we've talked about today, I think you should go in, talk to your provider, tell them about the symptoms you're having. If I had to guess, I would expect that the symptoms are getting worse, and that may well tie in to the fact that you are now really of menopausal age. So it's not just surgical, but whatever function that remaining ovary may have had is probably waning or gone. And so you would like to go in and speak with your provider about the risks and benefits to you of hormone replacement.
Okay. Is there anything I can do naturally?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the drugs that people or supplements that people have taken historically, like soy or black cohosh, when studies have been done that were completely blind in terms of people not knowing exactly what they were taking, the benefits of those dietary supplements have been found to be more consistent with placebo. So before I would strongly encourage you to go down that route, I'd like you to go in and see your provider, okay?
Okay,
Janine,
thank you.
Good luck. Thanks for your call. All right, let's try to fit one more in. Let's go to Robin in Saugerties. Robin, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question regarding the relationship between anxiety problems and the birth control pill. I'm 23 years old. I first started taking birth control when I was 18 because I had problems with ovarian cysts and just horrible periods, very irregular. I took it for about 4 years, and last summer I went off, and I noticed that I was having really horrible anxiety for about a year and a half, and the symptoms almost completely went away, the anxiety. And I started taking it again recently because of more cysts, and I find that if I take the birth control, I struggle with anxiety, like all different kinds of birth control. But if I'm off the birth control, I struggle with irregular periods and ovarian cysts. So I was wondering if you had any recommendations or any thoughts on the matter.
Yeah. If you're not planning on any pregnancy anytime soon, Robin, I would go in and talk with your provider about the possibility of using an IUD that has the progesterone in it. Mm-hmm. That will reduce the flow of your period without using a systemic dose. But what I mean by that is you won't be taking it hormones by mouth, mm-hmm. and they won't be going throughout your body. They'll basically stay within the lining of the uterus to reduce your menstrual flow, while at the same time you'd be avoiding the systemic birth control pill effects, which sound like they give you the anxiety.
Yeah. And is that a common symptom that people tend to have?
Not terribly common, but certainly if that's what you're experiencing, then it's important to evaluate it in you.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Okay, thanks for your call. 1-800, well, I'm not going to give the phone number anymore because we have no more time for calls. Doctor, thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it. The hour went by quickly again, Doctor. There's one other thing I'd have to bet back here. I want to repeat that there is a severe thunderstorm warning for Albany, Columbia, and Rensselaer counties. That's in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon, and the thunderstorm watch continues through 7:30 this evening. Support for Vox Pop comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, independent retirement living and cottages, or one- and two-bedroom apartments, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing, all on the same campus, 845-256-5520. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Daryl Bart for answering the phones today. Producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Bob Barrett, in on Medical Monday today for Alan Chartok. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. The news is up next.